Hi, my name is Professor Paul Baines. I'm Professor of Political Marketing at the University of Leicester and co-author of Marketing, 5th edition by Oxford University Press, with Chris Phil, Sarah Rosengren and Paolo Antonetti. This is the podcast for Chapter 9, Price and Customer Value Decisions. In this chapter, we'll explain the concept of price elasticity of demand. We'll define price and understand its relationship with costs, quality and value. We'll describe how customers perceive price. Price perception is hugely important in marketing. We'll understand how pricing strategies and how to price new offerings is undertaken. We'll explain the main approaches to pricing, which are cost, competitor, demand and value-oriented approaches. We'll explain how pricing operates in the B2B, business-to-business setting. Let's kick off then with price elasticity of demand. Price elasticity of demand really is a concept first developed in the field of economics, but very useful concept in marketing, and it provides with an understanding of how demand shifts with changes in price. So price elasticity of demand is equal to, and it's often called eta, the Greek symbol eta, it's equal to the percentage change in quantity demanded divided by the percentage change in price. And often enough, the price elasticity of demand for most marketed goods is somewhere between -9 and -1. And what that means really is that a 10% increase in price, for example, would produce amongst your average products, the average price elasticity is found to be -2.62. And what that means is that a 10% increase in price would produce an average 26.2% decrease in quantity demanded. So price elasticity is negative related. What it means is that supply is often reduces as price increases, and that makes sense. If something's expensive, you don't necessarily want to spend money more money on it, and you might buy it less. So pricing is a complex component of the marketing mix. It's actually the only element of the marketing mix that brings in some money for the firm. But pricing is really the amount of money expected, required or given in payment for something, an unwelcome experience or action undergone or done as a condition of achieving an objective. To decide the amount required as payment for something offered for sale and discover or establish the price of something for sale. That's the definition of pricing, if you like. Pricing, of course, is made, you know, there are certain costs when you go about pricing. You need to know what your costs are. But usually there are certain other relationships that it's necessary, financial relationships, it's necessary to understand. So total revenue is usually equal to volume of a product sold by the price at which you charge. So obviously you're interested in how much you price has an impact on how much revenue you generate, in other words. Profit can be expressed as profit equals total revenue minus total costs. So profit's quite important. And pricing is actually related to profit. So a McKinsey study once found that, found that a 1% improvement in price achieves an 8.7% improvement in operating profit. And that's way above other improvements that you could make. So you could improve variable costs, but that would only improve operating profit by 5.9%. You could improve how much you sell of something, but a 1% improvement only increases operating profit by 2.8%. And you could improve fixed costs, but that would only improve operating profit by 1.8%. So overwhelmingly, price is the best thing to improve if you can. In other words, if you can increase price, you should every day of the week. How customers perceive price, though, is the reason why you might not be able to improve price. So if you're offering something that's really good value and you increase price, it's easy. But if you're offering something that's maybe of weak value, then or everybody else is offering something similar at lower price, it's very hard to raise it. So perception of price is fundamental. And perception of price is related to how people perceive the quality of that product and proposition. Often how people value that product. So sometimes people see value as product over quality, product divided by quality. So in value equals product divided by quality. I personally don't really think that's true because price, if you think about it, if something had no price, in other words, if you handed somebody something as second hand, you gave them it for free, then the value would be, the price is zero divided by something equals zero. But that's not the true value. It's still got inherent value in it. So my preference is that value is actually equal to the price minus the cost. So if you pay nothing for it, then it's still equal to there's still an inherent value in this particular product. So value equals perceived benefits minus perceived price, rather than, as some people say, quality over price. Many years ago, I developed a perception framework, price perception formation framework, for how people perceive prices, with a DBA student of mine, a gentleman called Dr. Jose Mendoza. And when we did this work for his doctoral thesis, what we realised was that price perception is actually a cyclical process, and that lots of things impact on how we perceive prices. Things like our prior beliefs, what we've paid previously for something, prior experiences, how conscious we are of that price, how sensitive we are to that price, certain cultural factors. His later work found that people have different cultures, have different views of price, and other consumer characteristics, risk and so on. Price perception is influenced, therefore, by current reference prices, not just all the ones that we remember. Perceptions of quality, how aware we are of brands, how loyal we are to brands, how familiar we are with the product, and how familiar we are with the information surrounding that product. That's both its use and price. How willing are we to pay for that product? So what's our perception of product fairness? We may have, I think many men have, negative perceptions of the price of razor blades, for example, which are very, very expensive. Also influenced by the latitude of price acceptance. So, I think there's a certain gap, if you like, a certain range for prices. So if we're thinking about a litre of milk, or let's say 2 litres of milk, because that's how it's most commonly sold, then in the UK we might have a certain view of how much to spend on that, anywhere between, say, 80 pence and a pound. Beyond that, if it's significantly less than that, we might wonder why it's that cheap. If it's significantly more than that, then we're going to think it's expensive. And, of course, willingness to pay is also dependent on how often we purchase, how big that purchase is, how the price is presented, and the advertising associated with it. And then our behaviour. Our price perceptions are influenced by our purchase intentions, contextual factors around how much we might need this product. Maybe it's hot or something. If it was hot, we'll pay more for a can of Diet Coke, say, than we would if it was not so hot. Consumer promotions have an impact. Perceptions of store quality, and whether it's online versus offline and all that sort of thing. There are different pricing approaches, of course. Price setting can depend on various factors, how price affects demand, how sales revenue is linked to price, and so on. Broadly speaking, price increases up to a point as sales revenue increases, and then price drops off as sales revenue increases. So we see a curvilinear relationship between sales revenue and price. We see a negative relationship between total costs and price. As price increases, our total costs tend to go down. And how price relates to investment costs is largely based on a kind of staircase. So high investment costs, and as price increases, our investment costs drop in a kind of stairway, a downward staircase. There are different types of approach to pricing. The cost-oriented approach would mean that we would work out our costs first, and then add some kind of markup. So, for example, sales price equals the markup that we're going to charge multiplied by the cost, and then you add the original cost, and that gives you the price that you should charge. So, for example, if you had a high-quality laptop computer costing £1,000. And you wanted to add the 66.7% markup, the final price would be 0.67 multiplied by 1,000 plus the original 1,000, which is £1,670. So that markup is expressed as a decimal between 0 and 1, and then we divide the markup percentage by 100 to get that markup figure. The gross margin, which is sometimes confused with markup, is not the same thing actually. That's the markup divided by the sales price multiplied by 100. So in this case, it's 670, that's £670 that we're charging on top of the 1,000, divided by the whole price, 1,670, multiplied by 100, and that's actually 40%. So a 67% markup on £1,000 is actually a 40% markup. There's also the demand-oriented approach. With a demand, one of the problems, of course, with a cost-oriented approach is that you might actually be charging people less than they're prepared to pay. In other words, you could be losing revenue. With a demand-oriented approach, you look more to charging them what you think they will pay based on how much they demand that product. So airlines use a process called yield management, whereby they charge people different prices dependent on how quickly, how early they buy the airline seat, for example, whether it's 6 months before, 3 months before, and so on. And, of course, the volume of seats sold at any one particular time. And some airline seats are seen as cheap and, cheap and satisfying. All Nippon Airways, the Japanese carrier, is seen in that light. United Airlines, or China Eastern Airlines, is probably seen as, certainly in 2016, was seen as relatively cheap and unsatisfying. Expensive and unsatisfying, well, there are a few in that category, but in fact there are no airlines in that category really, but expensive and satisfying tend to be Japan Airlines and to a degree Turkish Airlines. The competitor-oriented approach is where you look at what the competitors are charging and then charge something similar based on the nature of evaluation of your product versus theirs. The competitor-oriented approach is sometimes known as me-too pricing, and it can lead to price wars. That's part of the problem. So you've got to be careful that if you're copying a competitor too much, they could respond by significantly reducing their price. And then you end up reducing your price. If you're not careful, they reduce it, and then you end up in a cycle, a negative cycle, and that damages everybody really. So there are circumstances under which price wars are more or less likely to occur, but they're less likely to occur when one or more firms has established a reputation for strong and tough responses to past price wars, where markets have intermediate levels of market power concentration, so neither suppliers nor buyers are dominant in any particular market. And there are lots of other conditions under which price wars are more likely to occur, and you should go through those in the book. There are different pricing strategies and objectives. There are four main pricing strategies. There's premium pricing, where you charge a lot for something because you think it's worth it. Aston Martin prices the DB11 at £150,000, for example, at starting price. Penetration pricing, where you charge a relatively low price compared to the competition to gain market share. Amazon adopted that approach to build its substantial customer base. It has a very low margin, for a very low gross margin, so it's not reaping a lot of profit. Actually, what it's doing is building up its customer base, but it is now a highly profitable company. But it took it many years, I think 10 years from 1995 to around 2005 before it started to make any profit, which is interesting. So their whole approach was to build a mass customer base so they could sell them lots of different things, and now they've done that, they are highly profitable. Economy pricing involves setting prices at bare minimum to attract price-sensitive customers. So supermarkets often use this with certain... So they have an everyday low pricing approach. Walmart does that in the US, Aldi all over Europe, and Jumbo in the Netherlands, for example. And price skimming. And that's where the price is initially set quite high and then lowered in steps over time. So Apple iPhone adopted that strategy. And it's frequently used for the launch of new technology offerings. When you're launching a new product, you can therefore either use a market skimming approach, which I've just explained, or a market penetration approach, which I explained before, which is setting a low price. If you have a market skimming approach, then you tend to charge more but the total quantity demanded would be less. Whereas with a market penetration approach, you're charging a lesser amount but selling a lot more. And you've got to weigh up which is the best way of doing it given your new product. There are lots of things to consider in pricing, in managing price. For example, the competition, how much competitors are charging, what's the cost, what's the demand, what's the value, as I've said. Those are the key things. And sometimes pricing is really not one approach or the other, but a mixture of these different approaches. So it's quite important to understand that. There are different approaches to pricing. You can have list pricing, where you just charge a single price for a particular offering. Hotels usually have that approach, to call them rack rates for, say, hotel conferencing facilities. You can have loss leader pricing, where you set the price at a level lower than the actual cost, which doesn't make a lot of sense for a long-term approach, but might be used on particular popular price-sensitive items to bring people in. So supermarkets do this on their very best-selling novels. They've also done it on baked beans and milk and bread. But the idea would be to get people into the supermarket and then they'd spend a lot more on other things while they're there. And that's where the money's made. Promotional pricing, so companies reducing the prices for just for one-offs, for a 10-day period, for example. Segmentation pricing involves setting prices for different groups of customers. Economists call that price discrimination. Customer-centric pricing involves companies taking advantage of customer segments by measuring the value perceptions, the value created, and designing a unique bundle of products and services to cater for each segment, and then charging an appropriate price. That's customer-centric pricing. You can also get pay-what-you-want pricing. Street music artists have used this. For example, Radiohead released their album In Rainbows in 2007 via this approach. And then the book game publishing company Humble Bundle also used this approach. But it has been regarded as a dangerous pricing technique because it doesn't always work. But it can work, actually. Business-to-business pricing, slightly different. Sometimes based on geographical pricing. Different prices being charged in different countries. Negotiated pricing, bartering about the price. Discount pricing, companies reducing the price on the basis that the customer commits to buying a large volume of that product, say, for example, or paying quickly or something. Value in use pricing focuses on customer perceptions of the attributes of offerings and away from cost-oriented approaches. It's often used for industrial propositions. Relationship pricing, charging less based on the long length of the relationship. So if it's been going for years, then there might be some sort of loyalty discount. Pay what you want pricing, I just mentioned it for consumer pricing, but it can also be used in business to business. A corporate legal firm, CMS Cameron McKenna, as it was known then, it's changed its name now, but offered pay what you want pricing to its corporate clients. Transfer pricing occurs in large organisations where there's internal dealing. So Airbus, for example, buys its different components of its plane from different suppliers, and it uses transfer pricing, which is the cost of the product for each supplier, and it pays them a certain rate. Economic value to the customer pricing. A company priced an offering according to its perceived value by the purchasing organisation. So, for example, the final price is based on a negotiation between the buyer and seller of the difference in value and how likely this value is to be achieved. So this kind of pricing approach might be used by large consultancy solutions companies such as IBM when it sells its software solutions. And then you've got the usual approach to pricing with B2B, which is tendering and bid pricing, where a company outlines what it wants another company to provide, and it asks for bids to undertake that service or provide that product. And various companies would bid for the ability to offer that product or service. And that's usually known as the tendering process. And, of course, you would submit a bid. And this tends to work quite well, because what companies then do is price it up according to what they think they can deliver it at. But it's essentially a competition, and the best firm wins. And the best firm might be evaluated on not just price, but their ability to deliver and a whole host of other things. Okay, so that's an overview of pricing. Thanks very much for listening.